dandy. I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. I'm glad I am.
So long, Uncle Sam.
I'm a real-life Yankee Doodle, made my name and fame and boodle, just as Mr. Doodle did by riding on a pony. I love to listen to the Dixie strain. I long to see the girl I left behind me. That ain't a Josh. She's a Yankee, by gosh.
Oh, say, can you see?
Anything about a Yankee, that's a pony.
Little Johnny Jones, the jockey from the USA.
We'll ride the pony, Yankee Doodle, English Derby Day.
Jonesy's broken records every track at every meet.
So Yankee Doodle's gonna be the boy they have to beat.
Sportsmen of the British Isles who followed his career have offered Johnny anything to keep him over here.
But all the money in the Bank of England couldn't pay enough to keep young Johnny Jones away from old Broadway.
If you want to take a trip, the surest of sure things,
have your houses mortgaged, hock your watches, pawn your rings,
and put it all on Yankee Doodle, Johnny Jones is up.
I'm gonna give America the English Derby Cup.
He's gonna give America the English Derby Cup.
I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. Yankee Doodle, do or die. A real live nephew of my Uncle Sam, born on the 4th of July. I've got a Yankee Doodle sweetheart, she's my Yankee Doodle joy. Yankee Doodle came to London just to ride the ponies. I am that Yankee Doodle boy.
He's a Yankee Doodle dandy, a Yankee Doodle do or die. A real life nephew of his Uncle Sam, born on the 4th of July. He's got a Yankee Doodle sweetheart, she's his Yankee Doodle joy. Yankee Doodle came to London just to ride the pony.
Remember me to Herald Square. Tell all the gang at 42nd Street that I will soon be there. Whisper of how I'm yearning to mingle with that old-time throng. Give my regards to old Broadway and say that I'll be there ere long.
Your regards.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and we're continuing with our program, Foreign Policy Begins at Home, with Richard Haass and E.J. Dionne.
Hi, Priscilla Clapp, also retired from Foreign Service.
Thank all you Foreign Service officers, by the way.
I agree with much of what you're saying, if not everything, Richard. And when I think about the solutions you're suggesting, I keep coming back to our Congress. Now, I haven't read your book yet, so I don't know what you say about them, but I'm just so distraught about the state of our political system, particularly in the Congress, the way it's chosen, the fact that people have to spend all their time raising money rather than thinking about the country's problems. Is there any way to fix that?
Look, yeah, I write about congressional dysfunctionality, which is part of a larger issue. Look, I think there's problems with how money operates in American politics. I think it's toxic. People spend way too much time doing it. My hunch is, though, that situation is going to get worse, not better. I think narrow casting of the media has made it more difficult. Everybody now can find his own cable or internet site or whatever, so we have the proliferation of many constituencies. It makes it much harder to build community. Political parties have gotten much weaker, much less significant, so there's that. There are some things we can do. I think, for example, open primaries help. That way people just can't appeal to one side or the other. Having redistricting done by non-political commissions rather than by state legislatures help. That way you don't get districts which are formed just around one or another set of demographics. But I think these approaches have their limits. I just don't think out there, I mean, I'm not a political scientist, EJ is, and probably several people in this room are, but I don't think even clever political scientists can devise a mechanical, quote-unquote, solution to what ails us politically. I think that is going to depend more about restructuring politics more grandly, about appealing either to get one or the other of the major parties more towards the center, or to, you know, there's different ideas. I see Peter Ackerman in this room about trying to animate the political center, or it just may take an extraordinary individual. And it may simply take an individual who can articulate a set of goals that enjoys broad support, and he or she then gets elected and is able to have a working majority. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're not going to be, though, a parliamentary system. We're not going to have the advantage, if you will, of political efficiency. That was the idea here. You know, when the founders built the system, the idea was to make it somewhat inefficient. Well, we've succeeded on steroids. And so the question is, how do we preserve what's integral to the American system, which is checks and balances and the rest, but without this degree of, at what point does inefficiency become dysfunctional? We have clearly tipped over in that. But I think pulling back from that, the answers are not so much mechanical as they are, if you will, more in the realm of politics.
Thank you. I think there are no mechanical solutions to this problem. I agree. The gentleman here, I think we are about out of time, and there is one other. We're supposed to end at 7:30, correct?
Okay. Yeah, about that.
There was also a gentleman back there. If we could bring in two questions at once, I think that would be good.
I can do both.
Sir, you can evade the hard one.
Yeah, I will.
Go ahead.
I'm Rob.
Questions at once, I think that would be good.
I can good. Do both.
Sir, you can evade the hard one.
Yeah, I will.
Go ahead.
I'm Robert Herstein. I'm intrigued, turning to the priorities you suggest for attention, I'm intrigued by the emphasis you give to North America. I had the impression that North America was doing pretty well, especially in the since NAFTA.
I'll turn to that. And there was a second question somewhere.
Yes, the gentleman back there. Thank you, sir.
Andrew Liberis with DHS. I'm interested in how optimistic you are, given the state of the body politic, the worst I've seen it in 29 years in Washington. How optimistic you are that any of this has a chance to succeed.
This gives you the opportunity for the ringing lecture on hope.
Is that, and then I can announce my political
ambitions. Exactly. And therefore.
You're going to get me into a lot of trouble here. For North America, we're now a market of 450 million people, probably another three decades, will be a market of 500 million people. We are now energy self-sufficient. put aside the notion of energy independence. That's not a terribly useful idea because the world's too interconnected. But we're energy self-sufficient in Northport. We have this extraordinary economic possibility. I actually think if there's what I would call a NAFTA 2.0, a more integrated North America, particularly if we figure out ways of combining Canada and Mexico with the United States, as we enter into these two potentially enormous new trade agreements, one across the Atlantic, one across the Pacific, if we figure out new ways of wiring together our infrastructure, improve the immigration system, and so forth, I actually think the potential of North America to be the world's economic engine is real. I actually, when people ask me why I'm somewhat optimistic, this is one of the reasons. The energy transformation, which as much as anything is a North American phenomena, and the potential for economic growth here. Take a step back. It is one of our great advantages. It's one of the endowments of the United States is the neighborhood. And that the fact that on our borders we have good relations with both Canada and Mexico, and Mexico's reality is far, far more diverse and far better than simply, you know, the very real problem of guns and drugs. But you've actually got a leadership there in place that is in many ways politically and economically reforming. You've had several rotations of power. Mexico is a real success. And again, the potential for North America, if it's more tightly woven together, and I think it will be, it's a question of how much and how fast. Its potential to be good for the 300 plus million Americans, but as well as for the world. I think there's this could be one of the great stories of the early 21st of the 21st century. And you know, I think it's just something. The president was just there, but it really is deserving of considerable high level. Attention. Why am I optimistic? Look, the reason to be optimistic is severalfold. One is technology. 3 or 4 years ago, none of us would have foreseen what's happened in energy. It really is quite remarkable. What's happened with shale, what's happening with tight oil. So it shows you the capacity of innovation. And in this country, you know, still has the world's best universities. We are, we've got land, we've got water, we've got a stable political system. We've got the most open country, even without immigration reform, we're by far the most open country in the world to immigration. With comprehensive immigration reform, we really do ourselves a favor. A surprising number, a percentage of our successful businesses have their roots in people who have come to this country. With some fairly modest changes to our laws, I actually do think we could get economic growth back to where it should be, above 3%. So, and we've got a very balanced demography compared to some other countries who have enormous numbers of young people or enormous numbers of old people. We actually have a better proportionality than other countries. So I can go on and on. It's another reason why the declinists are wrong. This country has enormous strengths and enormous potential. So the real question, again, is whether politics will get out of the way. Yeah, I'm an optimist because I somehow think it will, in part because it's too discouraging to think about the alternative. But also, it's not that hard. What really needs doing was it the Australian foreign minister, someone who said, America's one budget deal away from being a great power again, or something to that effect?
Yeah, Bob Carr.
Bob Carr. And it's there's something to that. And a budget deal, one or two other things to get economic growth above 3%, that would lubricate a lot of the ills. And I do think some of what I'm suggesting here is beginning to get more ingrained. I think there is something of a positive reaction on the foreign policy front. I think there has been, it can go too far, but at the moment I think it's quite healthy, a certain reticence to repeat in Syria what we did in Iraq and Afghanistan and Vietnam. I think that's healthy. The greater emphasis on Asia, I think, is healthy. This recognition of the unique possibilities of North America, again, I think is healthy. So I see correctives going on in the area of foreign policy that I welcome, and I see innate strengths and great potential domestically. So yeah, I think given all that, it'd be hard not to be optimistic. But it's not inevitable we get it right. And that's why, again, why did I write this book? It's to put out the arguments. You know, look, I'm like most people in this room, I work in the ideas business, and I believe that ideas matter. And what I'm hoping is that by putting out ideas like this, like I tried to in this book, it can help kind of influence or contribute to the debate in this country about where we're going and how we get there. And that, if people are sympathetic to this sort of ideas about what we should and should not be doing in the world and here at home, there's no reason that optimism won't become reality.
Richard, thank you very much. I got to say, I am really happy you wrote this book, because I think there are a lot of books that are interesting. And by the way, this is interesting, and Richard will be signing the book after this session. But there are also books that are interesting and constructive. And I think this book pushes us toward the debate we need as a country. And whenever I have agreed with Richard over the years, it has always meant that he gets into some kind of trouble. But in this case, I hope it only means that a lot of people read this book and think about it. Restoration as a U.S. foreign policy doctrine is about restoring the internal sources of American power and restoring balance to what the United States aims to do in the world and how it does it. Sounds like common sense to me. Thank you, Richard.
Hear great speeches and interviews at Access Sacramento every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
See the vendor last two bits. That's all, folks.